Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Global Patriot Radio. You, of course, can find us at blogtalkradio.com every day. That's right, every day. We have shows here, and it starts with Mondays. Monday, the Vito Esposito Show, featuring Big Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia, that goes every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Tuesdays, Eric is coming back with the Cross and Crescent discussion. That also goes to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones. And again, usually 5:30, but today I've got a commitment, so I'm going 5 today and going to just an hour. But normally, 5:30 every Wednesday. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff is in with the Sutliffian Report. Paul comes in at 6 Eastern. Fridays, usually at noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric does a little encore with, well, I guess you'd call it, it used to be called Real Interfaith Dialogue. It may still be, but what it is a continuation of the Cross and the Crescent discussion. That's every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, that one, you've got to download an app. You cannot just come in willy-nilly. There's good reason for that, by the way. As I said, I am Hank Jones. This is Hank Jones Polysports. If you want to listen to the show anytime, you just come to the website and go to Global Patriot Radio, and all of our episodes are archived for at least, I think, 2 years. If you want to interact with me off-show, several ways to do that. Email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Head it over to Facebook. Just type in Hank Jones Polysports. Or, heck, go to Twitter, @HPolysports. I get those notifications on my phone, so that's cool. You know, the best way, or one of the best ways, if you want to talk during the show or just listen in, you can also use your phone, 319-527-6706. You can do that because, well, it's one way to listen to the show, but you can also talk. If you hit the one when you're listening, you got something to say, that one. I get a little icon that says this person wants to talk or has a question or whatever. And so do that. I get a little hand raised icon. I am hanging out here in the official Hank Jones Polysports Space Force Observation Outpost. Fed the little Aussie a little early tonight. She was quite excited, as you can imagine, a dog that gets fed raw meat, frozen, so she doesn't wolf through it. But hey, that's what she would eat in the wild if she was a wolf or just any kind of dog. So hey, raw meat, bone and all. We grind up the bone too. That's primarily done by my wife, who's working over in Acoustic Hank Land, still in training with her new job. She really seems to be liking it. Let's get to today's first Internet Laffy from the Babylon Bee. This one's good. 12 alpha male tips for getting tons of women. Babylon Bee cracks me up. Number one, never clean your room. Does a bear clean its cave? Number two, keep no books or written words in your home. Reading is feminine and will shrink your test. Raw organ meat straight out of a freshly killed animal, just like our ancestors. See, I told you. Number four, if a woman says hi to you, punch her in the face. Otherwise, you just seem needy and pathetic. Number five, show no affection toward kids. It shows weakness, and it's a distraction from achieving your goals. Women love focus. Six, cuddle with other men to absorb excess testosterone. Number seven, spend hours in the gym with other muscular, vascular, bronzed-up alphas with a sweat glistening from their pumped chests. If you don't, you're gay. That's what it says. I'm just reading. Show her your prize kettlebell. If she responds well, she may tour your bull testicle freezer and your entire selfie collection. Number nine, find a nerd, carry him in your jaws to your prize woman, and lay him at her feet. Studies show women respond to this universal sign of interest. Number 10, don't ever ask her what she wants for dinner. Be an alpha and force feed her a 28-ounce ribeye. Now, I can tell you, there's a 28-ounce ribeye nearby. I'm not force feeding it to the wife. Hell no, that goes to me. Number 11, never speak to a woman who is past the age of fertility. It's not worth your time. disagree. Number 12, come to think of it, just avoid women at all costs because they love men, which is gay. Oh, the Babylon Bee. Second internet laughy does not come from the Babylon Bee. It comes from Twitter via someone who calls herself I Am Politics Girl, which says simply this. If you elect clowns, expect a circus. I couldn't have said it better myself. It's true. It's totally true. Okay, let's get to the obituaries. Last Wednesday, we lost German alpine skier and 1976 double Olympic champion Rosie Mitterbeyer at age 72. No cause listed. She passed away in Garmisch-Partenkirchen, Germany. By the way, if you've never been to Germany, go. And make sure it includes time in Garmisch-Partenkirchen. It's an absolutely beautiful place. Really is. 1932 Winter Olympics were held there, by the way. Thursday, we lost former Major League Baseballer Nate Colbert. He was an inaugural member of the San Diego Padres when they became an expansion team. He passed away at age 76, no cause listed. I actually remember watching him play against my beloved Cubs many times, usually those 10 o'clock games out on the coast. Growing up, WGN, hell yeah. Friday, we lost Owen Reutzman, American cinematographer. He died under hospice care at age 86. Just some of the films he worked on, The French Connection, which, by the way, is one of my personal favorite movies, The Exorcist, Network, The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a great album, not the best movie, but still noteworthy. Taps with Timothy Hutton and Sean Penn and a young Tom Cruise. Also, Ronnie Cox was in that. George C. Scott had a cameo. Absence of Malice, The Rose, and Vision Quest. Pretty good lineup. Saturday, we had a very sad loss. We lost America's little brother, Adam Rich, at age 54. I say that he was best noted for his breakout TV role as Little Nicholas Bradford on Eight Is Enough. He was the youngest brother, so hence America's little brother. Adam Rich made news, unfortunately, as an adult, mostly for his arrests for impaired driving and his attendant substance abuse and also depression issues. It's always sad when we lose celebrities of this genre, i.e. child stars who seemingly have adjustment issues as they become adults. Rest in peace, Adam Rich. Very sad. Sunday, we lost American journalist Bernard Kalb. Complications from a fall at age 100. He covered international news for basically all the networks at one point. And then he served as Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs in the Reagan administration, which was the first time a journalist who covered the State Department became its spokesperson. Monday, we lost Lynette Hardaway, a.k.a. Diamond, of the conservative activist and comedy duo Diamond and Silk. Unknown causes at age 51, Diamond and Silk, of course, became best known for their support of President Trump. They were banned from Facebook. They testified before Congress about that, by the way. Also were terminated from Fox News for questioning the legitimacy and validity of COVID data. They were right. Yesterday, we lost journalist Blake Hougel to suicide at age 44. It was reported by his family that he had suffered a long and courageous battle with depression. Very, very sad. We also lost Mexican pro wrestler Jesus Toral Lopez, who made his mark wrestling as Black Warrior. Unknown causes, age 54. By the way, man's trying to come back in WWE as they may be preparing for a sale. Evidently, now they are not selling to the Saudi Public Investment Fund, by the way. Before we move on, please don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service. Messaging services for your clinic, medical office, hospital clinic, service industries, government, believe it or not, government agencies. They do all kinds of work. They will do the job very well. And they also work with remote staff. So if you're one who wants to work remotely, it's also a good alternative to go to work for Alliance Communications. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or just go to the website, alliancecommunications.com. Internet Laffy from the B. Teacher frustrated as half her students detransition during Christmas break. Okay, let's get to the news and the notes and whatever. Houston Texans, they fire head coach Lovie Smith after just one season. I'm not even sure what's worse, the fact that he was only given one season or the fact that it appears he may have been fired for winning their last game, which gave the Bears the de facto number one pick for the 2023 NFL draft. Yeah, in any event, yeah, the Texans went 3-14. Pretty much a terrible season by any measure. But seriously, dumping a coach after one season? Basically, wide receiver Brandon Cooks, for one, doesn't seem to like it. He has said that, I don't want to be a part of any rebuild. I get that. Just think if it was college. If he was in college, he could just up and go. To the highest bidder, of course, but yeah, like Bedbug Eddie said in Pope of Greenwich Village, yeah, the whole world's upside down. Meanwhile, the Dolphins clinched a playoff berth with an exciting win over the Jets. That is, if you're excited by games with a score like 11-6, which featured three field goals and then a final play of the game safety for the winners and two field goals for the losers. Almost sounds like an Iowa game, doesn't it? Yeah, except the Iowa team that went one with two safeties and a field goal. Yeah, they ended up beating, and guess what else? That team is now a national champion. That's great. The South Dakota State, I believe Jackrabbits, won the FCS National FCS National Championship last Sunday. Here's the weird part. The only turnover in that game, in the Dolphins game, was that safety on the final play of the game. Now, it's pretty obvious from the Dolphins' perspective that losing starting quarterback Tua Tagovailoa is pretty much going to mean an early exit from the playoffs. NFL playoff picture looks thusly. The Chiefs have the AFC bye. The Eagles, with quarterback Jalen Hurts back, have the NFC bye. This weekend, it's the Dolphins at Buffalo, Baltimore at Cincinnati, and the L.A. Chargers visit the Jacksonville Jaguars. In the NFC, number 7 Seattle goes to San Francisco to face the number 2 49ers. The Giants head to Minnesota to take on the Vikings, and Dallas heads to Tampa Bay to take on the Bucs. And what could be, and we've probably been saying this every season since about 2015, in what could be Tom Brady's final NFL game. In better NFL news, Buffalo Bills defensive back DeMar Hamlin is back in Buffalo, still in the hospital, but he continues to improve each day. While he's still listed in critical condition, he is awake, breathing on his own, actually communicating directly and via social media. Interesting, the Bills dedicated last week's game to him and promptly responded by running back the opening kickoff, 96-yard return by Nyheim Hines. He also returned another one, 101 yards for another TD. The Bills beat the New England Patriots 35-23, eliminated the Patriots from the playoffs, while also securing the number 2 AFC playoff seed. Now, while there has been at least one supposition as to the cause of his collapse 2-plus weeks ago, important thing is for DeMar Hamlin to keep getting better. He still needs our prayers, most definitely. But it's good to see that he's communicating and improving every day. Let's see. Browns fire Bernie Kosar from broadcast roles over an NFL gambling policy violation. Evidently, he placed a bet involving the Browns, his former team. He's still affiliated with them as a broadcaster. So that's the rule. Here's from Cleveland.com, this little take on it. Basically, he's been an ambassador for the team, in-house radio shows, et cetera, et cetera. He said, Steelers game day, yet once again I was informed by the Browns that my services are no longer desired or needed. I will not be doing today's radio program. I am shocked and disappointed. Brown and orange is my life. The Browns had released a statement that said, earlier this week we notified Bernie per league policy we were required to remove him from our pregame radio coverage for the season finale after he had violated the NFL gambling policy by placing a bet on an NFL game. We understand what Bernie means to this community and our history, but as team contracted personnel hired to provide content on our media platforms, his bet was a violation of NFL rules, and we must adhere to all NFL policy. I'm not seeing what the mystery is, and I'm not seeing why he's tweeting out or whatever as if he's some kind of a victim. I mean, the rule's pretty clear. I mean, Pete Rose is still banned for life from baseball and can't get in the NFL Hall of Fame. Now, Bernie Kosar doesn't affect the team the way Pete Rose may have affected the Reds, but here's the thing. He's certainly one who would have more inside information about the team, injuries or whatever. So, yeah, that's an insider pretty much. Dopey Joe declares an emergency for California after storms kill 12 people and cause other weather issues. Yahoo's version of it. Basically, he approved an emergency declaration for Canada after a week of storms killed at least 12 people in the past 10 days and knocked out power for hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses in the state. Declaration authorizes FEMA to coordinate disaster relief efforts and mobilize emergency resources. In the last week, severe weather spawned violent wind gusts that toppled trucks, flooded the streets of small towns along Northern California's coast, and churned up a storm surge that destroyed a pier in Santa Cruz. And the reason I kind of bring that up, now, he did, I'll say this, Dumpy Joe did say that, you know, that DeSantis, Ron DeSantis had done everything right after Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. But I don't know. It just seems like certain states, I mean, that's par for the course, I guess, but I don't know. Some of it is self-imposed or self-induced by California. I mean, would they not go under such draconian measures of, you know, telling you what kind of power to have, et cetera, and what kind of car to drive? You know, maybe people would be able to respond better to some of these. Just me. Just me. Hey, here's some awesome news. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission is considering a ban on gas stoves. Here's the Yahoo article that actually showcases the idiocy, the absolutely moronic, self-serving, and self-fulfilling study to confirm it. You'll see what I mean in a second. Federal agency considers ban on gas stoves following report linking them to childhood asthma. Last week, in a study in the peer-reviewed International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, concluded that gas stoves, which are used in roughly, oh, wow, I just got a text from Hawkeye Mike. Well, Hawkeye Mike shares a birthday with one of my favorite guitarists, Jeff Beck, and apparently Jeff Beck has passed away from bacterial meningitis at the age of 78. Ah, terrible. Absolutely terrible. Anyway, this study concluded, when the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health is doing a study, they say that gas stoves are in use in 40% of homes, responsible for 12.7% of childhood asthma cases. The study found gas stoves are responsible for giving asthma to 650,000 children in the U.S. I would love to see this study. I'm looking through this. It's just amazing that I mean, when they do these little tests, these surveys and these experiments, and when it's done by a group like that, self-serving, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, it's like I mean, it's no wonder that they would come up with this kind of study. But how do they? I mean, I would love to know how they were able to track these asthma cases to the use of gas stoves. I really would. It said in 2019 alone, almost 2 million cases worldwide of new childhood asthma were estimated to be due to nitrogen dioxide pollution. Now, I will guarantee you. Now, it says 40% of households in the United States use gas stoves. So why are they talking about childhood asthma cases worldwide? How do they know it's due to nitrogen dioxide pollution? I'm sorry. No, not buying it. It's geez. One rather funny thread on Twitter shows a pic of Dr. Jill Biden cooking on a gas stove, and there's a question underneath that says, is this what happened to Biden? Another tweet about gas stoves causing cognitive impairment came from AOC with numerous awesome responses, including, yeah, you should know, you're the poster child for cognitive shortcomings. Oh, God. The gift that keeps on giving. California Women's Caucus calls for the removal of Dana White as UFC president. California Legislative Women's Caucus is calling for the removal of Dana White in a public letter addressed to the head of the promotion's parent company. The letter was sent to Endeavor CEO Ari Emanuel after video surfaced last week of White slapping his wife at a nightclub in Mexico on New Year's Eve. Says, ask for the immediate removal of Mr. White as president. The head of a major sporting organization cannot claim to be for the safety of women while a video of him striking his wife continues to circulate online without a response from you. The video, blah, 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 he could be saying something, which police, she slaps him in the face, White then slaps her back before the two are quickly separated. White says, no excuse for his actions, and he deserves whatever people say. In a separate statement to TMZ, Ann White said the matter was an isolated incident and that it was out of character. Endeavor and ESPN, UFC's broadcast partner, have declined to comment on the matter. TBS, which was scheduled to broadcast the debut of Dana White's Power Slap League today, postponed the episode till next Wednesday. So, God, what does it end? Former Illinois Republican representative and January 6th inquisitor Adam Kinzinger has a new gig. Yeah, in a move that surprises exactly zero people, CNN has hired Kinzinger as a political commentator. That ought to be worth about 3 minutes a week of your time. Wait, actually, no, that's worth 0 minutes of anyone's time. For his part, Kinzinger told CNN's Don Lemon, Lamont, whatever, that he isn't running for president, except that it would be intriguing to compete against Trump. He also railed on Kevin McCarthy while the election for Speaker of the House was going on. So, yeah, while people like Kinzinger rage on about a coup or corruption or whatever, he walks into a job at CNN. I'm not quite sure how he beat Liz Cheney to the post. Liz will do just fine, though, having increased her net worth by a mere 183% the past 3 years. Yeah, on a salary of $174,000. As a Facebook friend pointed out, if the 87,000 new IRS agents dedicate time solely to auditing members of Congress, the cabinet, and senior government officials, you know what? It might just be money well spent. Absolutely. Meanwhile, Democrat Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow has announced she won't seek re-election in 2024. She says it's time for the next generation to take over, and she is passing the torch. Yeah, all you need to do is take a gander at the pic accompanying her announcement. It ain't hard to believe she's been slopping off the government in some way, shape, or form since 1978. It's looking pretty rough. That's all I have to say about that. Speaking of corrupt Democrats, Adam Schiff may just be in the lead right now to take the cake, as it were. An article from American Liberty News' website outlines, per Matt Taibbi's release of the Twitter files, just how blatant Schiff was in his nonstop efforts to control news content. Yeah, this is really, I would say, disturbing. Pretty much, it's like I said, it's crystal clear that leading Democrat politicos held enormous sway over the work peons at Twitter and still do at big tech and other media, social media companies. Schiff's position as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee gave him credibility to push false narratives and then push big tech to censor any contrary views. Internal documents reveal how Twitter engaged in censorship and promoted disinformation in tandem with government agencies for the past several years, revealed that Schiff's office asked Twitter to remove journalist Paul Sperry and others from the site. Between Schiff's office and Twitter. It's unbelievable. In the article that Schiff wanted banned, Sperry said that then-CIA analyst Eric Schiramella was overheard talking in the White House with Sean Misko, a holdover staffer from the Obama administration. A former official who reportedly heard the conversation told Sperry just days after Trump was sworn in, they were already trying to get rid of him. Yeah, it's clear that these scumbags were doing all this. The problem is, who stops them? How are they stopped? Other than, you know, going after them politically. Wow, here's something from an appeals court. The Ninth Circus Court of Appeals, no less. The court has ruled in favor of a former Vancouver, Washington teacher, saying that his school, coworkers, and administration violated his First Amendment rights. Teacher was harassed for wearing a MAGA hat to work on two different occasions. Here's some of it from Patriot Action Journal. There's one part I wanted to read. Of course, I'm going to find it impossible to not to find it now. Okay, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled in favor of a former teacher in Vancouver, concluding that his wearing a hat supporting former President Donald Trump was protected speech under the First Amendment. Judge Danielle J. Forrest wrote in an opinion that some may not like the political message being conveyed is par for the course and cannot itself be a basis for finding disruption of a kind that outweighs the speaker's First Amendment rights. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, you know, like it or not. I mean, as long as he's not teaching it in class, as long as he's not saying that, you know, tell your parents to vote for Trump or whatever, there's no harm. I mean, it's a good decision. I mean, I'm not sure why we have to go to court over stuff like that. A former FBI assistant director for criminal investigations by the name of Chris Swecker has spoken about the agency as well as the Department of Justice as a whole. He was on John Solomon's podcast. Swecker is retiring after 24 years. He notes the politicization of DOJ and thus the weaponization of the FBI and other agencies under its umbrella. Here's some of it from the Great America News Desk. And this is from Paul Crespo, who is pretty in tune with what's going on, having worked in government himself. And he says it's basically a wholesale takeover by the Department of Justice, which is filled with political appointees in every top position, and then by extension right into the administration. You see DOJ people and many of the top executive positions inside the FBI now. You see people that have made a career out of bouncing in and out of silk stocking law firms between the DOJ and then these law firms. And I have to say they are incredibly liberal in their politics, and that has now sort of taken over the FBI. And they are inserting that ideology into their high-profile investigations. Swecker said the FBI's involvement in labeling school parents domestic terrorists and its bare knuckles pursuit of Donald Trump contrasted with its kid gloves cases against Hillary Clinton, Andrew McCabe, and Hunter Biden, not only shaken public trust in the FBI, but also the internal confidence in the FBI, meaning many within it are not confident in the FBI serving its purpose or doing what it was created to do. You know, the scary thing about this literally, I mean, we've heard about it before. You know, Obama did it. Hell, Bill Clinton did it. And I'm not going to say that Republicans haven't done it, because some probably have. But literally, it's using government agencies to steer the narrative. But it goes beyond that. It's actually steering the narrative in criminal cases, steering the narrative in our elections, hell, steering the narrative in our media as a whole. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. Of course, now we have word that Dopey Joe was holding classified documents at University of Pennsylvania's Biden Center. Yeah, not recent, from his time as VP during the Obama administration. He, of course, has dodged any questions about it. He said he was surprised to learn that any of government records have been taken to a former personal office where classified documents were discovered in November. Then he said to some questions while speaking at the North American Leader Summit in Mexico, he said, "People know I take classified information seriously." He defended how the discovery was handled, saying he doesn't know the contents. He doesn't. Says when his office lawyers were clearing out his office at the University of Pennsylvania, they set up an office for him, a secure office in the Capitol. The 4 years after being vice president, he was a professor at Penn. Sure he was. They found some documents in a box, you know, in a locked cabinet or at least a closet. And as soon as they did, they realized there were several classified documents in that box. And they did what they should have done. This is after he's gone after President Trump, and by the way, used his own FBI via his administration to go after President Trump. Here's another factoid from a tweet from USNA72 on Twitter. Takes on more gravity now. $54 million in Chinese gifts donated to the University of Pennsylvania, home of the Biden Center. Arch Kennedy on Twitter pointed out the classified documents were found in this private office on November 2nd. Why didn't we hear about this before the midterm? Of course, big media, led by CNN, is defending this because Trump, literally, they're all running with a compare and contrast graphic detailing how Trump and Mar-a-Lago was worse, you know, because Trump. What are they ignoring? Oh, just the fact that President Trump had the legal capacity to declassify whatever, whenever and wherever. Yeah, Dopey Joe, on the other hand, had no capacity, legal or cough, otherwise, to declassify anything while serving as VP. Again, if not for double standards, Big Left would have no standards. And now, as Mike pointed out in a group text a little while ago, they've apparently uncovered a second batch of classified documents that Biden took. And as he said, the hypocrisy is stunning. Now, Mike also said, with regard to Jeff Beck, he knows we don't think much of the New York Times, but they just announced with respect to Jeff Beck that, quote, one of the most skilled, admired, and influential guitarists in rock history has died. Says it all. Absolutely, it says it all. You know, back to the documents, you know, look, I mean, remember Sandy Berger, as Rush Limbaugh called him, Sandy Burglar, said he's refreshing his memory before testifying before the 9/11 Commission. He went to the National Archives and he stole documents. Says he didn't know he stole them, but he stole them. I'm under no illusion. It's across the political spectrum, but there are officials who probably take in or mistakenly take or whatever classified documents, well-intentioned, no malicious intent. But it probably happens more than we hear. That's not the problem. The problem is when, in this case, Donald Trump is still being harassed and pursued criminally for it versus Joe Biden, where CNN jumps on board and starts saying, comparing and contrasting and why it's bad that Trump did it but not Biden. Try to say the number of documents. Or again, the point is Donald Trump had the authority to declassify. Vice President did not. He had no business taking those. Yeah. As Mike said, like with Sandy Berger, they ought to check his Biden's shoes, socks, etc., pants. Who knows what else he took. Finally, this, before we go to break, we have a Speaker of the House. And according to the Epoc Times, who spoke with Tennessee Representative Andrew Ottles, here are a few of the concessions new Speaker Kevin McCarthy made in order to get the votes, or more accurately, to lower the necessary vote threshold by having some GOP members leave so that the vote threshold was lower. Accordingly to them, here are some of the I will only take a single congressperson acting in what is known as a Jeffersonian motion to move to remove the speaker if he or she goes back on their word or policy agenda. Two, a church-style committee will be convened to look into the weaponization of the FBI and other organizations, presumably CIA, etc. When I say church-style, the church committee did this back in the 70s, I believe. Number three, term limits will be put up for a vote. Number four, bills presented to Congress will be single subject, not omnibus, with all the attendant earmarks, and there will be a 72-hour minimum period to read them. Five, the Texas border plan will be put before Congress. The four-pronged plan aims to complete physical border infrastructure, fix border enforcement policies, enforce our laws in the interior, and target cartels and criminal organizations. Number six, COVID mandates will be ended, as will all funding for them, including so-called emergency funding. Seven, budget bills would stop the endless increases in the debt ceiling and hold the Senate accountable for the same. Now, supposedly, they have already stopped the funding for the IRS agents. We'll see how far that goes. It's a good start. But yeah, so Kevin McCarthy evidently made some concessions, and we'll see how well that holds up. Before we go to break, another internet laughy from the Babylon Bee, the eight most shocking revelations from Trump's tax returns. Some of these are good, some of them eh. Number one, he charged over $500,000 worth of business lunches at McDonald's, and he's still alive. What an amazing man. On his 2017 returns, he listed his occupation as America's favorite president. He claimed 328 million people as his dependents in 2019. Technically true. Number four, Melania's returns filed in eventually were also released for some reason. She used the same tax guy as Trump, though. Suspicious. Number five, his charitable contributions include copies of Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, for starving children in Africa. The famous hole-in-one on the seventh hole at Trump International was written off as a business expense. Smart. Number seven, he signed all tax forms with a gold Sharpie instead of a blue or black pen. Number eight, he applied for the same basic deductions available to any American citizen. Criminal! Yeah, it's true. They've just totally gone after his stuff. It's unwieldy, you know, it's unruly. Shows the Trump debate derangement syndrome, no doubt about it. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and I would pull Jeff for the outro. We're going to go with I mentioned the death of Owen Reutzman earlier, who worked on this movie, one of my favorites, The French Connection. This is the subway scene. Be back in about 3 minutes. Thank you. are back. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports, and our little break music there is called Subway from the French Connection movie. It's not from the soundtrack. Soundtrack version is different. That was from the actual movie. Awesome scene. Okay, let's get back to it. Cover some sports here. Monday night, there was a CFP title game, or there was supposed to be one anyway. Oddsmakers had defending champion Georgia as a 13-point favorite over upstart TCU. Over-under was 62.5 points. T. Bodie asked for predictions in our group text. I had Georgia winning but not covering, and I had the over-under being obliterated by halftime or mid-third quarter at the latest. Georgia covered by the middle of the second quarter. The fact the over-under wasn't eclipsed until the fourth quarter was not their fault. TCU managed a whole 7 points game. Georgia won eventually by a score of 65-7. Could have been worse. Could have been worse, but Georgia missed their final extra point attempt. Yikes. For Georgia, it's probably just another notch in their dynasty belt. For TCU, kind of tough to know. They lose Max Duggan, quarterback Max Duggan, who was sort of the leader of their inspirational season, title game notwithstanding. Tell you what, the two other semifinal teams had to be kicking themselves watching the game Monday night. Ohio State had to be thinking what might have been, especially considering losing wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. during the game, having missed a field goal, although it was a 50-yarder. That kept them playing from Monday night. Michigan, on the other hand, can blame a comedy of errors, maybe a bad call, in their loss to TCU. They had to be thinking that, hell, we wouldn't have been embarrassed this badly. Meanwhile, Georgia quarterback Stetson Bennett has a second natty, the tender age of 25, in just his sixth season of college football. Please note the element of sarcasm in that last sentence. ESPN has their way too early top 25 for next season. Georgia's number one. TCU checks in at 12. We may ultimately wind up with a Max Duggan was more valuable to his team scenario, given that Georgia returns a lot of talent. Of course, with Ohio State at number two, Michigan at three, FSU at four, and Bama at five, it really just reads like a which blue blood will be better article anyway. In short, it was a fun season to watch. Still had the predictable SEC team wins at all result. As for the game itself, TCU could do nothing right. It kept snowballing. Their defense looked lost. The offense put them there with several short field turnovers. Georgia, really, which looked beatable just 9 days earlier, Ohio State, they looked like a 1980s or 90s era Miami Hurricanes team that never challenged. I mean, it's over by mid-second quarter. Only thing that required the rest of it to be played was ad revenue, really. Seriously, if it wasn't for ad revenue, there would have been no reason to show the second half of that game on television. When you couple that with ESPN's never-ending butt-kissing of all things SEC, pretty much made for near worthless viewing. Now, on a sad aspect, Monday, Air Force offensive lineman Hunter Brown died, quote, after experiencing a medical emergency as he left his dormitory, unquote. The 21-year-old Brown played two games this past season. Air Force officials and the El Paso County Sheriff's Office announced an investigation is ongoing. You hate to think it was COVID vaccine related, but why else all of a sudden would we keep seeing presumably healthy athletes dropping dead without warning? Look, I'm not a doctor, of course, but this is not happening. This was not happening with this kind of frequency prior to the COVID pandemic. It just wasn't. Very sad. The 2023 American Football Coaches Association conference concluded yesterday. Several proposed changes thus far. Among those, an earlier tampering guidelines and penalties, a reevaluation of the limits on on-field coaches versus analysts, extending bowl eligibility by not having a bowl game count against redshirt availability. NIL, the transfer portal, also, of course, remain at the forefront with a divide, pretty much a divide between those willing to push the envelope of pay for play versus those that still want to retain a veneer of the student athlete concept. One thing not mentioned seemingly is the idea of an NCAA, even a revamped NCAA getting involved in all this? There's a reason for that, of course. A couple of nice things from college football. Start with Kansas State defensive back Julius Brents, who actually began his career as an Iowa Hawkeye. He recently declared for the NFL draft, and while that was not a surprise at all, the announcement did come with a very pleasant surprise. In the announcement, in addition to thanking the usual God, coaches, staff, teammates, Julius Brents also thanked his original head coach, Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz, for giving him the first opportunity in college football. Julius Brents was a highly rated recruit, I think a 3-star, maybe a 4-star, but I'm pretty sure at least a 3-star. And very promising. He may have gotten passed on the depth chart. And I believe it was 2020, just mid-season, just announced he was entering the transfer portal, which is kind of unfortunate. But he had not just the grace, but the class to thank his original coach. He didn't have to do that. He really didn't. So it's nice to see that. Secondly, I led a paddle tour last week in downtown Orlando. It's where I paddle when it's not bioluminescent season. Anyway, on my tour last Friday, I'm looking at a manifest, and it had a name on it. It made me wonder. Now, the kid I'm talking about is a junior. In other words, he's named after his father. That tour name was current Purdue wide receiver, former Hawkeye wide receiver, Tyrone Tracy. I looked at it and I thought, gosh, it could be a parent. You know, it could be his parents, could be no relation whatsoever. And while I won't go into too many particulars, suffice it to say, he's a great kid. I really enjoyed just paddling with him, and he seemed to enjoy it as well. Good kid, fun-loving. We always go on about kids who transfer or don't pick our schools or whatever. We forget these are just kids, or at most very young adults, who often don't know exactly what they even want in their future. Guess what? Most of us didn't or don't at that age. We also forget that there is a reason coaches pursue some of these kids beyond their athletic abilities. And it's pretty easy to see why Iowa coaches, as well as his teammates, liked and got along with Tyrone Tracy and still to this day get along with him. He talked about the fact that he's still friends with his former teammates, still talk back and forth, text back and forth, et cetera. I'll tell you, he's intelligent and engaging, of course. But he's also just a genuinely nice and likable young man. He has another year of eligibility for 2023, which he will spend at Purdue. And while it's certainly a cliche, but I truly do wish this young man nothing but success. With the accompanying, equally cliched, except when he plays against the Hawkeyes. Good luck next season and in your future, Tyrone Tracy Jr. You deserve it. You've earned it. I mentioned to him, I was at your breakout game in 2019. He said, what, Wisconsin? Said, no, that wasn't your breakout. He goes, Minnesota? I'm like, dude, what? I said, Northwestern. He goes, oh, yeah, it was my first start. Well, it was his breakout game. He caught a pass and went 50 yards with it, caught a short pass and took it 50 yards for the touchdown. He also did have a great touchdown against Wisconsin later that season, which had us wondering why we weren't going to him earlier, et cetera. He had a couple good touchdown runs and catches that season. He didn't have quite as many the next couple years. He got that start in 2019 because Brandon Smith was injured. He played behind Brandon Smith and Amir Smith-Marset the next year, 2020. Had some interesting conversations. I asked him for one, you know, another former Hawkeye played it with him at Purdue, Charlie Jones. I asked him who's faster. He goes, that's hard to say. He says, he might be faster, like straightaway, like on a straightaway. He goes, quickness, making the cuts and stuff, no way. There's no way he's faster than me. I asked him about other guys, and he said, well, some of them he didn't, you know, he's answered. Some of them he didn't know because they played different positions. or they were somewhat equal. I asked him, though, about Amir Smith-Marset. A lot of people always said Smith-Marset was the fastest, and I always kind of wondered, well, is that because he was a track guy? You know, he wasn't a sprinter. He was a hurdler. You could see he was fast. He said, oh, no. I was asking about different guys, and then when I said Amir, he said, oh, no, he was the fastest. No doubt. He was the fastest on the team. Very humble about it. He could have just said, he didn't. He said, oh, no, he was the fastest. I mean, he didn't, you know, he was very honest about his own abilities. And just honest about the whole thing. I mean, you know, we talked about recruiting. And we talked about Caden Proctor. And he said, you know, he goes, it could have been anything. They could have just sold him whatever. He goes, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, they're young. We're young. There's a lot of reasons we do or don't go where we go. I mean, it's just simple as that. This is what got interesting, though. We talked about the portal. We talked about NIL. And he was the one who offered. He goes, the NCAA is going to have to do something about this at some point. He says, because it's just, there's just no, you know, there's just no rules right now, it seems like. People are just going wherever and getting whatever. He says, there's got to be a rule. And I asked him, you mean, like, you know, kind of to elaborate or whatever. And he talked about the fact that they're just handing money out. You know, so I asked him, you know, in other words, just not name, image, and likeness. And he said, sort of. I mean, they're, you know, most of these collectives and stuff, they're not giving you deals, name, image, and likeness deals. They're just paying you to come to their school. It's nothing more than that. It's just flat out pay for play. And he said, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And there's, you know, there's no, he goes, there's nothing stopping it. There's totally open transfers. You know, I made the joke about Brandon Cooks from Houston Texans saying, you know what, if he just if he just went back to college, he could go anywhere he wants. So just, you know, hearing that from a player was eye-opening. You remember I told him about having interviews with Felicia Goodson, the mother of his former teammate Tyler, and he said, oh yeah, she's really nice. He says, you know, he says his whole family is really nice. He comes from a really good family. You know, that's He didn't have to say anything. I mean, he was very complimentary. I told him about what Justin Britt's parents being split on it. His mom, Nikki, being for it, and his father, Sam Britt, saying, it's going to be a lot of, you're going to see guys that were never really team first in a lot of ways who've always sort of been for themselves, but that's going to really come out. And Tyrone Tracy totally agreed with that. He did not badmouth anyone. He actually was very complimentary of Iowa. He was complimentary of this. He says that, you know, one of the things about Iowa, they keep their staff around. I remember he lost his own coach this year at the end of the season, Jeff Brohm, and several of his assistants just up and leaving for Louisville, Brohm's alma mater. He wasn't bitter about it or anything, but he did seem kind of like, yeah, didn't surprise some of us. He talked about, you know, it's hard when that happens. He goes, but it's especially hard when you lose a position coach. And T. Bodie has talked about that. T. Bodie played a couple of years in college and said, you know, it's the position coaches where you worry about. And as Tyrone Tracy said, you're literally having to prove it all again. So just a nice young man. Had a good talk. In the meantime, we're going to give you one final internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. GOP binge watches Schoolhouse Rock episodes to see what they're supposed to be doing. Oh, God. The Babylon Bee. They also did one. They have Lucy holding the football for Charlie Brown, and it's followed by this caption. GOP appoints Lucy to lead investigation of Joe Biden. Perfect. It's exactly what that's exactly what I'm afraid we might be getting. Deathly afraid that's what we might be getting. All right, in the meantime, folks, we're coming up on time. Like I said, we're only going an hour today. Have a great rest of the week. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe. And we will be back next week. In the meantime, next week I might be doing a little bit of more of some tribute to Jeff Beck, because I'm just shocked to hear this news. Very sad. But in the meantime, he is gone. One of my favorite guitarists, one of the best guitarists in rock and fusion history. Have a good one, folks. Thanks for being here. And we will be back next week at 5:30, not 5. Have a good one, folks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
And I want to thank Sue and Mike, Hawkeye Mike, both for being here on the phones this week. No chatters this week, but thanks to Sue and Mike. And again, folks, we'll be back next week. Have a good one.